Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
Yes, you can email the show, aliveandkicking at newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram. I'm at Claire McKenna Presents. Coming up this morning, the hallmarks of a healthy relationship. I'll be joined by psychotherapist and one of the best relationships I have in my life, my best friend, Alison Fagan. How urinary health is so much more than drinking water with nutritional therapist with Natural Life, Sarah Berriton, and what a wellness holiday really looks like with Sinead Kennedy, mental health and wellness advocate, coach and host of Wellness Activity Breaks. I'll be asking her for all the top spots. So what kind of a health and wellness week did I have? Well, I'm not sure how I am, to be honest with you. I am grand in the very Irish way, in that there isn't anything wrong. I have survived the wisdom tooth extraction and all is well, bar the usual work-life balance challenges. I met a lovely woman called Anne in a car garage this week. She recognised my voice from the radio, which is mad by times, but she is a listener to the show. And she said to me, "You're always so positive." And I do try to be, but I also, as I said to her at the time, try to be honest. And I'm not always positive. Sometimes I get tired, overwhelmed, and just feel a bit down. I do always try to see the glass half full, remain grateful for this very privileged life that I lead. And I do try to lean into the practices that I know keep me strong and steady, but it doesn't always go to plan. Sometimes life issues get the better of me and I start ruminating and I worry. Sometimes even the self-awareness means that I know when something isn't sitting well with me. I know when maybe a crossroads is approaching, when change is calling, even if I'm not sure what that will look like. And that can also feel unsettling from time to time. I saw Chris Connolly, also known as Get Better with Chris, on social media, an amazing guy who I've had on the show, who's rebuilt his life from addiction and promotes health through his 5K with Chris series. He posted a very honest account of feeling low lately, and I thought it was really great to see. Tough for him, of course, to share in that way, but I think we often talk about mental health as if there's a before and an after. It's something you struggle with and then it's happy ever after, instead of it being the ongoing journey with ups and downs. So I'm going to leave the final word in this week's sharing to Ronan Keating, the sage that is Ronan Keating, when he said, "Life is a roller coaster and you've just got to ride it." You can email the show, aliveandkicking@newstalk.com. Now, urinary health is perhaps not something you consider until there's an issue, but how can we maintain optimum health and minimise the need for medical intervention? Sarah Berriton is a nutritional therapist with over 20 years' experience. She's worked with Natural Life for the last 15 and she joins me in studio now. Sarah, you're very welcome.
Thanks for having me on.
I mean, it's not a sexy topic, but it's an important topic and it's not something we talk about often, our urinary health. Yeah. In fact, we kind of wait until something goes wrong before we seek help. So is there things that we can be doing day to day to maintain it?
Yeah, from doing lots of clinics and talks as a nutritional therapist, I find it does come up when you're chatting one-on-one, particularly with women, but men too, that imbalance that can happen in the body, in the urinary tract. It's a very delicate system. And people are busy, you know, eating on the run. There's lots of things going on, stress. People, busy work, they're not drinking enough fluids, you know, they're holding on. So definitely there's loads of little things that we can do. You know, food wise, I suppose it's really important to be drinking hydration. It sounds really obvious. So up the amount of water from what you're doing already, you know, 2 to 3 litres. But I find it easier to break it into smaller amounts throughout the day. And try not hold, try to go to the toilet as soon as you feel that urge.
It's funny, I talk about that a lot in any of the talks that I give, that introception, that listening to the signals of the body. And so often we override them. We say, oh, you know, I'm hungry now, but sure, it's not lunchtime yet. I'm not going to eat. I'll wait. Yeah. I need to go to the toilet. Sure, I'm busy. I'll go. I find myself doing it. Sometimes if I'm rushing out the door and grabbing my keys, I'm like, I could probably do with going to the loo, but I'll just do it when I get there. And I may have a half an hour drive ahead of me. I stop myself and I say, what are you doing? Are we saying we can't give 3 minutes to spend a penny? But we do it all the time because we're busy, aren't we?
We're learning.
It does have an impact.
Yeah, definitely. Because the longer you're holding, you know, there can be more bacteria there. It's just better to keep flushing it out, you know, and microbiome that's contained all throughout our body, but particularly in the urinary tract, is a very delicate balance. And lots of things can interfere with that. So, you know, through our lives, if people are on medications, maybe we don't have fermented foods with these beneficial bacteria. So that's why Climarine D-mannose complex is brilliant, because you've got a few specific strains in there that live in that area, Claire. Because you could take different bacteria, but maybe they're further up in your digestive tract. So really, to keep that balance, it's a very delicate balance. And we need to keep the system just slightly acidic. So the foods that we encourage, you know, friendly bacteria in there, you know, kefir, your fermented foods, your kimchi, that kind of food. But then also, you know, taking specific strains, Lactobacillus rhamnosus, you may have heard of that. That's a really important one. And that's part of our immune system, keeps that gentle balance, just slightly more acidic, because that's the unfavourable environment for these bacteria. The problem is with E. coli and different bacteria, when that area gets depleted in the good army, kind of, as we call it, they can kind of penetrate into the system, set up redness, inflammation, pain, and maybe then you're developing an infection. It also helps with what they call secretory IgA. It's a little bit technical there, but that produces natural mucin. So it just keeps that area nice and lubricated. So when that bacteria comes into the system for whatever reason, through our food, you know, stress, different things, the bad bacteria can develop in the system. It can't latch on. They have little suction. The bacteria have like little suction cups, and they can latch on to the body. But if it's got this mucin, this layer of slippiness, they just slide off of it. So that's really important. So, yeah.
I like suction cups.
My analogy.
I like army. I mean, I can really see, you know, what you're saying. It makes sense.
Yeah.
And I do find it a very overwhelming space. Yeah. And I'm somebody that works within this space and has a real keen passion for gut health and the microbiome.
Yeah.
But I find with the products on the shelves, it can be very difficult to know who to trust, because there's all kinds of labelling around, you know, good for your gut, live, and you don't know which ones to go for. So can you get any of those strains in things like live yogurt? I know you mentioned fermented foods, and
absolutely,
that's a given.
Yeah.
But what about your normal live yogurts?
Yes, some of the yogurts will have another strain that we have in that product. Lactobacillus or the rhamnosus will be, that one we mentioned, will be in some yogurts. But I think the problem is, and I'm all for food first, always food first. I take certain supplements myself at different stages, but if you're not doing the basics right, and I've heard you speak about it too, your sleep and, you know, hydration and stress. But the problem is, if people have that imbalance and things are out of sync, you know, having a little bit of kimchi and a live yogurt may not be enough to correct that imbalance and help with these symptoms that people have, like, you know, urgency, frequency, pressure, kind of irritation. I'm always check with your GP, you know, if anyone has fever or any kind of blood, or they're concerned if symptoms are ongoing as well. But yeah, I totally get it. Foods like quinoa, your brown rice, your whole meals, your green vegetables, the water dense fruits like celery, you know, your watermelon, they will be really good to keep that area really moist as well. But yeah, there's no one size fits all as well.
What about cranberries then? That's something that always comes up when it comes to the urinary tract. Is that an old wives' tale, or is there anything in it?
No, definitely cranberry would be one of the most important nutrients for that area. And if we think about it, think of your blueberries, your cranberries, your red grapes, that bright colour, the reds, the blues, they're full of compounds. They're like polyphenols, we call them, that bright colour. They're little protection molecules in that fruit to protect the berry and the plant. So when we take them on, they have a very protective effect. What I love about cranberry is they have, here's another big one, PAC, I suppose, is the small name for it. Proanthocyanins are these compounds that give them that bright colour. And they particularly have PACA, things like grapeseed, like those really, really purple grapes have PACB. And these compounds are like antioxidants. They're polyphenols. They help to flush out bad bacteria. They're antioxidants for our whole body, so they'll help our skin and everything. But cranberry has been shown in studies to be really helpful. I think sometimes just drinking a glass of cranberry juice, the problem, it's fluid, it's liquid, it's going to be good in that sense. But watching, you know, the quality of it, is there sugar? Because sugar will be, you know, having a detrimental effect on that area at that time if you're having problems. But also the amount of these PACs can be really low. You know, the level you're getting in a glass of that juice is really low. So when you get cranberry extract, it's what they call standardized. So you know you're getting that high level of these PACA.
And if you're going to supplement, do you supplement when you've had frequent urinary tract infections, or is it something you do as a preventative measure?
Yeah, you can do it both. I would definitely recommend, you know, if somebody's on an antibiotic for a particular infection, you can take something like Clemarine D-mannose complex with these ingredients. And that's what I like, that we've put those friendly bacteria that are specific for that area, the cranberry, the grapeseed, and D-mannose, which is like a natural sugar, but it acts like a decoy. So it's kind of calling over here to the bad bacteria, and they stick to it and they've flushed out from the body. So I would, if you're prone to those types of symptoms, that's something you can take maybe two a day as a kind of preventative, and to put that lovely shield there to prevent the bacteria getting into the system. But if you want it alongside the antibiotics, because sometimes people can feel, you know, wrecked afterwards, you could up your dose, but just do it 2 hours away from it. That one won't be kind of killing the other.
Yeah. And obviously, you know, you have a urinary tract infection, you go to your doctor,
absolutely,
you get an antibiotic. That's really important.
Yeah.
You know, I know it's really important to have preventative measures and nutrition in place, as you've said.
Yeah.
But ultimately, we do need sometimes to receive medical help. But I do think we're starting to talk a lot more about this now, and what's normal and what isn't normal.
Yeah.
Before now, it might have been a bit of a taboo. It might have been a bit embarrassing.
Absolutely.
And people thought, like, this is just who I am. So things like incontinence, things like urinary tract infections. People are now starting to seek help, particularly when it comes to women, and,
absolutely,
you know, whether it's postnatal, whether it's perimenopausal,
right,
people are talking more about things that they can do to ease symptoms and not just struggle on.
Yeah. And like as a preventative, as you said, so maybe something like that is suitable for a man. Men can take it as well as women, that particularly as estrogen drops in the body as well, Claire, that area can become kind of drier. So it's really important. And what happens is the bad bacteria are more likely to get in if kind of little slits develop, and they can get in into your system. So yeah, preventative. People are busy. They want to get on with their everyday life. And I do know there's a service the pharmacies offer now with different ailments that you can go and speak to your pharmacist. But yeah, it's great to see much more open talk when we do women's health events. People come up and talk about it, you know, even from working in health food stores as well. I would find people would, back when I started, just pick a product and run to the till and pay. Now they're getting into more conversations about their symptoms and talking about pelvic floor exercises, which are really important as well. Yeah.
And before I let you go, you've recently qualified in herbal medicine.
Yeah.
So tell us a bit about that. That's quite an exciting qualification.
For my sins, more studying. Yeah, really exciting. Just always loved herbs along with nutrition, and just to see the power of them, really. Some common kind of cupboard herbs that you'd have, or garden herbs, but then they work really well with nutrition as well for different ailments. I just love them. Yeah.
So is herbal tea a way for people to embrace the knowledge you've studied hard for?
Absolutely. Start small. Like, we would work with tinctures, you know, and they would be in a much higher concentration. But, you know, even when they're mixed with the alcohol, I find them hard to take. You know, you can dilute them down, but herbal tea is a great way to start. Just really look for good quality tea. Quite often in the supermarket, you know, they can be very fine powder. So buying something like a chamomile tea, or, you know, something like that, you want to actually see the flower, you know, so you can get really, really good quality ones in your health food shop, or maybe nettles and things like that. Dandelion, people can
nettle tea is
forage.
One of my absolute favourites. Yeah. And it's so good for us, isn't it?
So good for us, yeah.
I have yet to go and just whip it up from the garden myself, but maybe one of these days. So you're taking a break now for the summer. Are you giving yourself a rest from the studying anyway?
Yeah, until I decide maybe what I'll do next.
Well, Sarah Barrett, nutritional therapist with Natural Life Health, thank you very much for coming on.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking. Now, relationships are a huge part of our well-being. The people in our lives, those we are born with and those we choose ourselves, can energise us and also drain us. There are some we can change and others we can't. But I wanted to cover the topic on the show. And who better than my best friend, Alison Fagan, couples psychotherapist whose work focuses primarily on relationships, be that a romantic relationship or the one we have with ourselves. And you're very welcome.
Thank you so much, Claire.
And I think from the outset, we just should say we're a trio. When it comes to best friends, there is Irene in the mix. And if she was listening, you know, we don't want to cause any rifts.
No rifts.
Seeing as relationships are what we're here to talk about. And you indeed have been one of my best ones in my life.
And you too, to me.
We know each other since school days. So we know each other at our most vulnerable. We've been through all the different milestones up until this very day. So I'm delighted to have you here.
Thank you so much. It's lovely to be here and thank you for asking me.
There's going to be questions that I think maybe I've never asked you before. So you've worked in healthcare ever since I've known you, went on to do nursing, to run your family-run nursing home for many years, and then more recently, in the last few years, into psychotherapy. So even though I was there to celebrate all that, I don't think I ever asked you what was the moment you decided to make that change.
Yeah, I think it came about because working in healthcare for like 25 years, I found myself feeling really burnt out towards the end of my 30s. And I knew I needed a change. I knew I hadn't got another 10 or 20 years left to give that profession. And so I had done an awful lot of therapy myself back in my younger years. I found my teens and my 20s particularly difficult. I found that I didn't really know who I was. I wasn't happy in myself. And so I went down the journey of trying to explore what that meant and why I wasn't feeling happy. And so therapy was a huge support to me at that time and something that I've kind of leaned into across the course of my life. So when it came to looking to see what kind of a career move I could make, therapy seemed to be really obvious when it was kind of my passion. It was a bit of a side interest that I'd had since I began my own journey. And I mean, I found myself lost on self-help aisles more times than I care to really admit. And so the idea then that I could make this my career seemed like a total win-win really for me. So
yeah, I know you're getting paid for it. Indeed. So yes. And you see all kinds of clients and you have over the course of your training and in work, but you're choosing to focus a little on couples and relationships. Why is that?
Yeah, so I see both individuals and couples, but I do have a particular interest in relationship therapy. I think in my previous career, the part that I really loved towards the end was the cut and thrust of maybe the staff dynamic, maybe mediating between two staff members and supporting staff. And so the idea then of doing the same in a couple's environment really appealed to me. And also, I have been very fortunate enough to have two successful marriages. I'm in my second marriage, but I've been divorced. And I'm kind of acutely aware of the heartbreak, the trauma that goes with the ending of a significant relationship. And so I think I can bring that awareness to my couples and also provide hope that just because one relationship ends, it doesn't mean the end maybe of the person or their identity. And so we can kind of explore what relationships mean to people and how they can become their best selves both in and out of the relationship.
Yeah, because I said at the start in the introduction, our relationships are a huge amount of our well-being, because we do, I talk about this all the time, we do tend to focus on green juice and, you know, yoga pants. But really, the people we're spending our time with is perhaps a better place to start before we even go near the juicer.
Yeah, for sure. If you're going home and if you're a stranger to the person that you're sharing a bed with, it's, you know, it feels like relationship purgatory, really. So there's no intimacy in some relationships, and that's really sad. And when couples feel maybe that there's no point, I think couples feel that if they're attending a therapist, that it's like the death knell in their relationship, or that a relationship therapist is like the Grim Reaper. And really, it's far from it. Like, I think a lot of the couples I see come just to navigate really difficult times in their relationship. It doesn't necessarily mean that the relationship is doomed to fail. So Yeah, the people come for a variety of different reasons.
Yeah, one of the things that I always remember, we got married in a church. So we went and did the marriage course with a court. And one thing that really struck me was when the mediator, the leader, whatever you want to call her, she was saying, you've got to remember, you've got one person coming from one family, one set of values, one way of doing things, one past.
Yeah.
And you're coming with perhaps a very different one. And now you're going to merge together and say, well, who's right? It does need help and support.
It does. And I mean, I think to think that relationships are going to be a smooth sailing is kind of naive. That we have to be able to, I suppose, grow and change. And can we do that within the relationship? Is the relationship kind of supple enough for us to be able to grow as individuals and together as a couple? I think relationships, there's a huge amount of expectation put on relationships to be almost the life support for the person. And if the relationship feels at any stage it's rocky, I think couples are afraid that signals the end, whereas actually they might just need support in relation to better ways of communicating, better ways of arguing, better ways of understanding each other, and understanding, like you say, that kind of blueprint that they've come from, and why people respond in the way that they do. It's not necessarily a personal attack on their spouse. It's actually out of, you know, a part of their past that they haven't yet really fully understood.
Yeah, and often I speak as well about accessibility to therapy. Mm. It's not something that everybody can access for a variety of reasons. So you're going to give free therapy almost. You're going to come in over the next few months and we're going to look at some of the big things that pop up in relationships, everything from conflict to rowing to infidelity. But I really wanted to set up today by introducing you to it and talk, as we have been in general, about relationships. So you've kind of touched on it there. There is no such thing as a perfect relationship. I do think rom-coms have a lot to answer for. It's not really like that, is it, in real life?
No, it's far from it. And I think that a whole idea of perfection just sets us up for failure. I think the word perfection itself kind of gives me the heebie-jeebies, because it's impossible to achieve. And what's right for one couple will be the antithesis of what's right for another. No two relationships are going to be the same. So you can't compare yours to another and think, well, we've got it right and they're, you know, they've got it wrong, or vice versa. But that being said, I think there are certain pillars that, if we're talking about long-term committed relationships, as opposed to, I mean, there are loads of different relationships. There's short-term, there's open relationships, there's, you know, relationships that travel the test of time over 60, 70 years, you know. But if we're talking about those relationships where there's a committed duo, we'll say, in the relationship, I think there are certain pillars that will indicate this relationship maybe has the strength to sustain the challenges that life is inevitably going to throw at them.
Yeah, because if you're going to be together for a long period of time, so many things change from...
Absolutely.
Possibly kids, if that's your thing, job loss, job start, job change, death in families. So, you know, what's fun and great in your 20s is a very different relationship.
It's
25
temporary.
Years later.
Everything is temporary. And I think to know that and to be able to be open to the curiosity of what's next, rather than holding on so tightly to maybe to what you had or what your expectations of what were a perfect relationship. I think we need to be open to the possibility that change is inevitable, and we need to be flexible within that.
So, aside from perfection, what are the hallmarks of a healthy relationship?
Okay, so I think the idea to be able to communicate your needs and to be able to communicate, first of all, to know what your needs are, I think it actually starts there. It starts with your own self-awareness. If you've got somebody, two people in a relationship who are completely blind to their own ways of being and aren't really interested in reflecting or learning about why they behave in a certain way or why they respond in a certain way, that's going to be very difficult to work with. So the idea of being open to your own self-awareness is really, really key. And within that, then, knowing maybe what your needs are in a relationship and being able to ask for them and ask for them to be respected. I think that that's really a fundamental part of a strong relationship, is knowing what your needs are, asking them to be met, and also being able to withstand the disappointment if they're not met. And it doesn't mean it's the end of the relationship. I think relationships have to have a sense of robustness and have to be able to navigate the cut and thrust of disappointment. Like, life is hard. Relationships are hard. And couples therapy is really hard. I suppose I'll say that couples therapy is very confronting, and it challenges couples in all sorts of ways. But it's really, really rewarding when couples are willing to make the changes that they need to make in order to make their relationship kind of thrive rather than just survive. So again, I suppose I'm going back to maybe the communicating your needs as being a foundational pillar. Trusting your partner. So no matter what kind of a relationship you're in, there needs to be some sort of either an explicit or an implicit boundary around the couple contract. So what are the expectations that I have in this relationship and what are yours? And to be able to verbalise them is brilliant. And often couples don't. And it's only when they hit, you know, a bump in the road that they realise, hang on a minute, you know, you never told me that's what you expected. We never spoke about that. But to be able to verbalise your expectations and to trust that they will be met or that they'll be upheld and that they'll be respected, I think is another huge one. I think the freedom to grow, a bit like we've said, that, you know, there's different types of relationships. Some relationships, particularly long-term, people meet in college, they haven't yet fully found their whole identity. They create this identity of their life together. And so that type of relationship just requires so much flexibility and ability to grow if they want to see it through to, you know, their grandchildren. So yeah, flexibility and adaptability to growth and to changes that are going to occur. And then fun and intimacy and vulnerability and the ability to love and be desired. I think it's a huge part of certainly some of the couples I see. They've lost that sense of what it means to be truly intimate. And that's not just about sex. It's about being intimate and vulnerable and feeling like you're seen, like the person gets you. And it's like what's in the unsaid, but also in the playfulness and the desire and the sexual side, your sexuality, I think is a huge important pillar of a good, strong relationship.
Yeah, and I do always think, it comes up so many times on the show, about aging, the way we look at aging, we kind of step back from a lot of things, like such as that fun, desire, such as connection, such as trying new things. Yeah. We're like, well, I'm just going to slope off into the corner here as I age. I think we really need to change how we look at that.
Again, it's about being curious and it's about having a sense of adventure, a sense of fun, a sense of what's new, as opposed to, well, this is the way we've always done it, so therefore it needs to stay the same, you know?
What would be some of the red flags you'd look out for in a relationship? How do you know it's not working or not salvageable?
I think from a couples therapist perspective, there are certainly red flags in relation to couples maybe that aren't suitable for couples therapy. I think that's probably important to know. Not every couple is suitable for therapy. And by that I mean, you know, if there's obvious issues of domestic violence, that, you know, could put either one of the parties at further risk of maltreatment if you're asking them to come into a therapy room and be vulnerable and be really honest. So domestic violence is a huge red flag for couples therapy for it to be effective as a barrier. Then just on from that would be like ongoing addiction that's not being treated. It's very hard to do therapy with a couple where the diversion for attention has been taken elsewhere. And similarly with infidelity or with an affair, if somebody is actively participating in an affair, it's really impossible for them to focus fully on couples therapy. And so they wouldn't be conducive to therapy. And then other little things, not little things, I don't mean to minimise them, but untreated psychiatric conditions like depression, like bipolar, like schizophrenia. It's not to say that you can't work with people who have these conditions, but it's like if they're unmedicated or if they're untreated and if there's not an acknowledgement that these issues exist, it becomes very difficult to work with couples. So that's from a therapist perspective. But then from a relational perspective, I think, again, issues around domestic violence, if your partner has a propensity towards aggression or violence or control, I think that would be a red flag, certainly. And I think people who have a lack of empathy, who aren't in any way able to hold themselves to account, to apologise, to see their part, where everything is so black and white, there's no nuance, there's no scope for maybe both sides of the argument. It's not to say that you can't work with those people, but certainly I think that they're the type of people that need maybe to be dragged into therapy if they're willing to go. They're not a barrier, but they certainly make relationships more difficult.
And those people you touched on there, and I send peace and love their way,
absolutely,
should they be having therapy alone before they come to the couples?
I think not necessarily. I mean, you can work absolutely with couples and work on them individually within the couple. And sometimes that's really effective because it actually opens up this channel of empathy that one person can actually see how much the other person is struggling. And it opens up this sense of intimacy and a permission to be vulnerable in the presence of the other. But back to maybe the ideas of addiction or mental health disorders that are untreated, I think they need absolutely to be treated individually, and at the same time they can attend couples therapy, but they do need their own individual treatment also.
Well, I've no doubt it's going to be a really interesting series. You're going to come back in a couple of weeks and we're going to look at a topic in detail. But I'm so grateful to you for coming on. Something I just thought, people often say, you know, we sound the same. Hopefully people don't think I'm just sitting here talking to myself. I wish I could be that eloquent when it comes to relationships. If you want to find out more about Alison's work, you can go to libertygoldsmith.com. Alison Fagan, psychotherapist with a lean to relationships. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you so much for having me.
Alive and kicking on News Talk. Alive and kicking on News Talk.
You're welcome back to Alive and Kicking. Now, Sinead Kennedy is a mental health and wellness advocate, a coach and host of Wellness Activity Breaks, fun, uplifting getaways that bring together adventure, good company, fresh air, amazing food and bits of movement too. Having travelled solo around the world, she learned firsthand the value of independence, self-trust and getting comfortable in your own company, something she now helps others to do through her work. Sinead, you're very welcome.
Thanks, Claire. Thanks for having me today.
I couldn't wait to have you on. We were a panel on the phone together on Lunchtime Live, and I was like, she's a bit of me now. Obviously, it's health and wellness trips that you organise, so you had to come on the health and wellness show.
Absolutely. So, yeah, and like we said on the show with News Talk, that mine aren't brown rice and omming. They're very much, you know, for real people like myself. So, if you want to have steak and wine, that's absolutely okay. And for me, it's all about just getting people out of, you know, out of the doldrums, basically, you know, lifting their mood and getting fresh air, sunshine. You know, I'm just back from Madeira. I had 17 people with me there. We did beautiful walks. We were swimming in waterfalls. We were on boats looking at whales and dolphins, and just great food and great fun atmosphere. And that's, for me, that's what wellness is all about, is just lifting and elevating your mood.
And something really stuck out for me on that interview. You were saying you've gone on a couple of these wellness weekends and found, you know, it was sort of, I always think of grated carrot, like grated carrot salad. And that was kind of it. And you're like, I'm knackered. I'm exhausted. We're going for hikes. I'm underfed. What's this all about? That's a very opposite to what you want to do.
Yeah. And that's really was one of the big catalysts for me to set up my own trips, because I couldn't find one that suited me that I wanted. You know, they were all either very much, like I said, you know, brown rice, shredded carrots and just too much, you know, really sort of listening to other people's problems, which I think, you know, misery loves company. And that can really, you know, somebody says, oh, my problem is this. And then somebody else says, well, my problem is better than your problem, you know, and it just escalates. Whereas for me, I just want to get people out, jumping in the sea, having the crack, and forget your problems for a little while. And then the answer will pop up. You know yourself, when you're lying on a sun lounger, you suddenly think, oh, actually, that's the solution. That's the answer I was looking for all along. And you hear it when you settle yourself down and you're distracted from life and from the problem.
And as somebody who likes weekends like this, like, you know, some of your hotspots like Madeira that you're just back from, I'd love to go. The walks look incredible. And it's nice to go with somebody who's going to lead you. I get completely bamboozled. You're, you know, looking at reviews. You're trying to figure it out on Google Maps. To just be a sheep and follow somebody on amazing experiences, that kind of takes the sting out of it. That's even more wellness.
It does. And you're very right, because, you know, I have gone and researched the hotel and, you know, I've done all the excursions and I've, you know, made up a price for you. And what I always like to do on my trips is to have like a buffet style. So you can choose the excursions you want to do and leave out the ones that you've no interest in doing. So again, everyone has that much more freedom. Now, I am so lucky. I'm bringing a group to Sri Lanka and the Maldives in February. And that will be a little bit more rigid, because we are on a tour of Sri Lanka. So we all will be in the bus together. You know, we have a tour guide and a driver with us. But again, we're being brought and we don't have to worry about anything. We don't have to think about it. He's going to say, OK, guys, we're here and this is what we're going to see. You have an hour. Come back to me in an hour. So again, you don't have to stress or worry about getting from A to B. It's all done for you.
So this is totally living your best life. I mean, what a cool job, Sinead. Was this born when you solo travelled?
Yeah. So what happened was, I've always solo travelled. I'm single forever and I love it. And I want to go to places that other people don't want to go to. And also they don't have the time or maybe the resources that I have, because they're tied up with husbands and kids. And that's absolutely fine. That's, you know, we all have our own boat to row. So I kind of was left with no choice but to go
traveling solo. And then when I would come back, people would say, oh my God, I'd love to do what you do, but I'm not brave enough. I'd love to go there. And I'd be like, oh, sure, here's the itinerary. But like that, they were like, oh, I just want somebody to hold my hand or come with me. I wouldn't be brave enough to sort it out on my own. So then I started, then COVID came and Dublin Airport, when it was closed, I nearly lost my mind. I thought, it's so funny. People say to me, what's the one thing that would kill you? And it's like, Dublin Airport is closed. And it happened. Like, who thought that would ever happen? So as soon as Dublin Airport was open again, the first thing I did was I went down to Mallorca, found a hotel, and the next thing I had a group down there with me. And I've been to Mallorca. We're heading for our 8th trip to Mallorca now in October. And that's a really relaxed one. That's a beach yoga mini break, and you come and go and have yoga and dips in the sea. And then it just kind of escalated. So then last year I brought a group to Morocco and we were in hot air balloons at sunrise. That was amazing. And then this year I got a bit braver again and I went to Madeira. And next year I'm just going all out, and it's Sri Lanka and with an add-on to the Maldives if you want to do the Maldives.
Good for you. What do you say to people who are listening and go, oh God, no. I mean, holiday is about lying on a sun lounger, reading your book and drinking cocktails. Why would you be hiking and doing and going?
Well, you know, we're all different. And look, you come to different stages of your life. There was a time all I wanted to do was lie down on the sun lounger. But now I just get a little bit bored with that. You know, I'm a bit more antsy. You know, I just want to be up. But as long as there's somewhere nice to walk or heritage or culture, I'm very happy. But I do sit down on a sun lounger as well. I will always have my rest days. And like that in Sri Lanka, I have put in beach days. And like that at the end of the trip, we have 4 days in the Maldives. So I'm all about blending now. And I think most people my age that I have on the trips, you know, we're sort of 50s, 60s and 70s. They don't want to sit out in the sun all day, every day. It's just, you know, we're past that. Or, you know, people have had skin cancer scares. So again, it's just not an option for them. So we have other things. But my trips are called Zen and Tonic. So they're very much activity, culture, but there's also this really big tonic, and that's sitting down, having meals, having the crack, getting to know other people and having fun and resting on sun loungers.
So do people come solo or is there a mix?
Very much. Most of my customers would be coming solo, but like that now, I'm so proud. I've created such a lovely community, and some ladies came on my trip to Mallorca and they all met each other, and they come every year to Mallorca and they're just back from the Caribbean themselves. They went on a cruise, so they all met on my trip and now they all have somebody to travel with. So, you know, they may be widows or people whose husbands perhaps are farmers and just can't travel, you know, or their husband doesn't want to travel. Or like myself, they just have a passion and they just want to go places and they just don't care who they go with, you know. So that's really who I attract. So it's brilliant.
Yeah. And I do find of any events that I have held, like be it a hike or, you know, a retreat, you know, you don't have to feel the need to share your whole life story. But often things just come out naturally as and when. So if you want to share, you share. If you don't, you don't. And that's different than sitting in circle and actively encouraging that.
Oh, very much. And, you know, actually, I'm a coach as well. And very often what I'll do is I'll take somebody for a walk, because then you're walking shoulder to shoulder. You're not face on. So people will open up more when they're shoulder to shoulder. Or if you want to talk to somebody, you know, get them in the car with you. And again, there's not that direct eye contact and they can just be a little more open with you. And, you know, I'm a cyclist and I know everyone will go mad, but when we're cycling two abreast, that's when the men will talk, because again, there's not that direct eye contact. So you're not sitting down saying, tell me your problems. Like you said, it just naturally comes up. Or and you feel very safe when you're outdoors and you're side to side with somebody. And like that, nobody on my trip is there to hear your problems. And I would always say that at the welcome meeting, you know, nobody paid money to hear your problems. But, you know, if you need to talk to somebody, I'm there. If something starts to come up, like, you know, I'm trained, I have qualifications, so you can talk to me. But again, don't feel like you have to shut down yourself either, because I know myself from traveling solo. That's when all my great ideas come up. That's why I always travel with a pen and paper or a dictaphone. When I wrote my book, Life is a Cycle, again, when I'd be sitting in the car, all these great ideas would come up to me. So I'd be on the dictaphone in the car, you know, leaving myself voice notes and discussing the chapters. And I do think, you know, a quiet mind is when it hears itself speak. So you really have to dampen and quiet yourselves down. And for me, it's always been about getting out in fresh air, hiking, walking, cycling, or just sitting on a park bench watching the bumblebees.
Yeah. And I do think to take yourself out of your everyday life is a really powerful thing to be able to do for yourself, to be out and about walking, taking in views. All of a sudden you feel a little bit more insignificant. That can be a positive thing. You're meeting new people, you're getting fresh perspectives. So all of this is feeding into very much the epicentre of what it means to be well.
Totally. And, you know, we're all so busy and disconnected. And it's only when you sit down and connect even with a bench and a cup of tea and, like I said, you know, you're watching the bumblebees, that you start to connect back into yourself and connect back to life and the world. And it's not all about you. And but, you know, that for me has always been my greatest therapy, is remove myself, get outdoors, either sitting down or on my bike. And I've just had so many business ideas, like Sri Lanka came up off the back of a bike. Like, do you know what I mean? I was just like, oh, I think I'll go to Sri Lanka. Sure, I'll bring everybody with me. Great. And, you know, here we are booking it now for February. And like that sometimes, you know, if I'm having, I had a really bad breakup about 10 years ago and I was devastated, but I took myself off. I went backpacking around Cambodia and Myanmar. You could travel there at the time. And I just had the best time. And I just thought, you know what? I just don't need him. I'm grand. I'll live. I'll be okay. You know, I was okay before he came along. I'm grand now.
Yeah. And you seem more than okay, it has to be said. With everything you know, we asked you to come up with your top destinations. So we're going to start with Europe. Where are your top spots?
I am totally in love with Madeira now, having been there. And I was lucky enough, obviously, I have to go down and check out the hotels before I bring my group. So I always get to do a nice reconnaissance trip. I think Madeira has absolutely everything. It's only a 3-hour flight direct from Dublin. Very much a nature lover's. If you're into gardening, it's tropical. It's called the Hawaii of Europe and it is botanical. And, it, you know, the temperatures are very, very nice. You can expect around sort of 22, 23 degrees. Now, there's no beaches as such, but all the hotels would have beautiful pool areas. The beaches are all black sand or a lot of cliffs, but there's loads to do, but also amazing for food. Very reasonable and really, look, I don't drink, but I believe the wine and stuff is very nice as well.
And it's a hiking spot, isn't it?
Yeah, but I mean, when I say hiking, you can go, like, we just went on a beautiful walk into a waterfall. It was 4 kilometres flat, went to the waterfall. I got in the waterfall. I was the only one swimming. But anyway, and then you walk back out. So there, you can make them as easy or as difficult as you like. There is mountain biking there as well. But there's a beautiful cable car up to Mont Palace, and that's botanical gardens, flamingos, Chinese gardens, like Japanese gardens, absolutely stunning. So it's a very restful place. It's very nice. It's the little city Funchal is tiny. So, you know, you're not like, you know, New York just wouldn't suit me. It's just too much. Whereas I'm much more about outdoors and greenery and nature.
I feel like I'd like to meet myself in Madeira. You're also a big fan of the Dolomites, something I'm hearing more and more about.
So the Dolomites are absolutely superb. So they are north east Italy. So you would fly into Venice and drive northeast about 3 hours. So you're kind of heading towards Austria. So absolutely stunning. And the Dolomite is actually a range of mountains, and the Dolomite stone, it's the only place in the world that it's found. So they're these very jagged sort of, they look like knives sticking up out of the earth, but around them are just the most beautiful meadows, like real chocolate box meadows with moo cows with bells on them and buttercups. And like, it is so, so peaceful and absolutely stunning passes. You know, like we would say Sally Gap, they call them passes. So all these beautiful narrow passes. And again, beautiful for walking holidays. I went cycling. They're really tough cycling. But if, again, if you're an avid cyclist like me, you absolutely want to go there. Great for motorbikers as well. Lots of touring bikes as well. Again, beautiful food and very, very I'm into this stage now in my life where I kind of want these grown-up holidays. I don't want to go where there's strips full of Irish and English pubs. Like, that's just not me anymore. I'm up on the mountains now. So now, don't get me wrong, there was a time I used to be swinging from the chandeliers.
But totally.
That was a lifetime ago.
And you want good food. You don't just want, you know, toasted ham and cheese and chips with the pictures at the front, even though there's a time and place for that as well. But you want to be able to enjoy local food, eat well, fall into bed satisfied, Wake up and look at a beautiful view. I mean, I don't think that's old. I think that's clever.
I think it's, you just mature and you just appreciate the world. Whereas when you were a kid, you just want to go drinking. Like, well, I did anyway. So, yeah.
I know. I always laugh. One of my friends had a house down in Clare. It was her dad's mother's house. And we went down in our 20s and then we returned later in our 40s. And we pulled back the curtains, the net curtains, and we were like, look at the view. And I thought back to our 20s. I don't even know if we opened the actual curtains, let alone the neck curtains. So yeah, your appreciation of a view comes with old age, and why not? Or middle age.
Yeah.
The Camino is coming up for you, something that I love to do and something I'll I did love doing and something I'll definitely return to again. It is a gorgeous holiday and a gorgeous way to see the world because you're stopping at so many different towns along the way.
Yeah, so, you know, again, what I decided this year was we are doing a 4-day Camino, which is plenty. We're only doing 78 kilometres over 4 days. And then we have 2 days in this beautiful farmhouse sort of I never use the word retreat because I'm allergic to the word retreat, but you know, where we can relax and do a bit of yoga in the garden and again, enjoy the sunshine, sun loungers and a few glasses of wine. So I know most hardcore sort of Camino trips are maybe 5 or 6 days pure walking. They want to do the 100 kilometres to get their certificate. But again, thankfully with age and wisdom, you kind of think, well, do I really need a certificate to tell me I was there? And personally, I think no. And again, my ladies, you know, a lot of us, you know, we've got sort of injuries or niggles or knee problems at this stage. So again, I'd rather just go out and do 4 happy, healthy days and 2 days of rest because it's zen and tonic after all.
Oh my God, I love it. So where can people find out more?
They can find out everything on my website, Sinead E. Kennedy, or .com, or they can follow me on Instagram, which is Sinead Kennedy Wellness. And there's loads there. So yeah, lots of great trips coming up and loads more to look forward to in the future.
Sinead, I'm making a pledge. I am going on a Zen and Tonic trip. There is no question in my mind. Maybe a Madeira one of these days. Also, Sinead's book is called Life is a Cycle. Sinead Kennedy, thank you so much for coming on.
Thanks, Claire.
So that's it for Live and Kicking for this week. My thanks to all of my guests, my producer Aoife Breen and to Hugo Da Silva Scott, who was on sound. Rory Galvin was on podcasts. And thanks to you for listening. I will see you next week.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.